Radio Prague News.
The Czech capital city Prague remains under a high security alert because of a terrorist threat. Anonymous threatening callers are complicating the security situation for Prague police. And an inmate in the Brno prison is back in custody after setting the prison on fire and trying to escape. The Czech capital Prague is in its second day of a high-alert security watch. Special security measures were enacted at 4 a.m. on Saturday after an extraordinary session of the Czech cabinet decided to increase security measures in the capital city because of a possible terrorist threat. Prague's Druzhiny Airport has implemented what are being described as massive security measures, though no flights have been cancelled. The city center and other possible targets are also being patrolled by additional specialized police units, but the police chief says that there is no need to call for the army's assistance at this time. Surveillance in the city is assisted by some 1,100 cameras, 600 of which are in the metro system. Czech Interior Minister Ivan Langer has stressed that this is the first time that the Czech Republic faces such a concrete threat. The Daily Pravo's online service Novinky reports that the terrorist threat is related to the Jewish New Year, and that Prague's Jewish district of Josefov likely faces the most serious threat. Speaking at a press conference, Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek said that he would neither deny nor confirm the reports. Authorities have said that the situation in the Czech capital is connected to Friday's developments in Norway, where four men were arrested and police are said to have uncovered a terrorist plot to bomb the Israeli and the American embassies in Norway. The extraordinary security measures have also inspired several prank callers, complicating the situation for police. The first serious threat came on Saturday, shortly after the news of the terrorist threat was made public. A bomb threat forced the closure of Prague's Metro Line C, but a police investigation found nothing. An anonymous bomb threat was also called into the Marriott Hotel in Prague 3 early Sunday morning, forcing the evacuation of some 200 hotel guests. Police searched the premises but found no explosives. Police are warning that if the prank callers are identified and found guilty, they face up to 5 years in jail. Meanwhile, an inmate at the Brno prison has also tried to make a dramatic escape attempt. The incident happened late Saturday when an inmate started a fire inside the prison, forcing its evacuation. Then, amidst the thick smoke, the man attempted to escape. A spokesman for the prison has said that the inmate was captured but suffered numerous injuries. And finally, a quick look at the weather. There are mostly sunny skies expected in the next few days, with daytime highs of 21 degrees Celsius. I'm Linda Mastalis, and that's the end of the news. This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Linda Mastalis. In today's program, we answer your letters in mailbox. Stephen Weeks has this week's letter from Prague, and later, another edition of Czech Books, which, inspired by the success of the Summer Shakespeare Festival, takes a look at what Shakespeare means for Czechs today. But first, it's time for Mailbox.
It's Sunday again, which means we are back with excerpts from your letters and emails. This past week has been European Week of Mobility, and a number of events took place, raising awareness of the importance of transport and mobility, but also the significance of making travelling more environmentally friendly. The protection of the environment was also the subject of two other reports recently broadcast on Radio Prague. Both inspired Mr. David Eldridge from England to send in a comment. The first one was about encouraging young people to save electricity and heat.
Since 2002, I've been generating my own electricity through solar panels. It makes you very aware of how much electricity each household appliance uses. I soon realized the significance of running my old food freezer. It was using more electricity than all of my other electrical consumption put together. And forgetting to turn my computer off of standby mode in the evening will show up on my monitoring equipment next morning. Water is so easy to collect from rain off the roof and use it as brown water, reserving the mains supply for usage that really requires the water to be clean.
The population of the European red squirrel has been undergoing changes in the Czech Republic over the last decades, and now a project involving school children is trying to monitor the incidence of the animal and its habits. Again, a response from David Eldridge.
The red squirrel is extinct in most areas of Great Britain now because the grey squirrel carries the disease squirrel pox virus, which has mild symptoms in the grey squirrel but is usually fatal to the red squirrel. The grey squirrel now has a hold in Italy and appears to be spreading to other areas of Europe in the same way it has spread through Britain. The grey squirrel causes much more damage to forests than does the red, so for economic reasons, I expect squirrels will receive much more attention in your country soon.
From animals to music. Beverly Chartrand listens to us in Canada, and she's one of many Canadian listeners who have sent in questions concerning the music we play on Radio Prague.
I heard the end of a wonderful piece of orchestral music played by Radio Prague on CBC overnight on September 18th, and I'm hoping that you can tell me what it was. It was just before the 5:30 a.m. local time news broadcast by CBC One in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. I could not find any station logs for that day, but I'm hoping that you can, even if you send me a list of music broadcast internationally on September 17th and 18th, I could probably figure it out myself.
Well, in most cases, we can tell you right away what the music was, as we keep record because of copyright reasons. But the problem with the CBC rebroadcast is that sometimes they play older programs, and unless you specify what was discussed in the program, it is difficult to guess what particular music you have in mind. So in this case, we would really need a little more details to be able to track it down. Staying with matters artistic, in February we reported on a case of censorship when the authorities in a Belgian coastal town banned from displaying a work by the Czech artist David Černý. The controversial piece was a sculpture called Shark, featuring a life-size Saddam Hussein in his underwear with his hands tied behind his back, floating in a large glass tank filled with formaldehyde. Now we got an email from William Hollister, the curator of a recent exhibition in Poland.
David Černý's work of art, Shark, was censored from an exhibition in Poland that I curated. One day after the opening of Shadows of Humor, possibly the largest representation of Czech contemporary art in Poland, a city official in Bielsko-Biała demanded that the work be removed immediately and ordered that the subject not be discussed in the media. From the perspective of David Černý, the work had no serious problems when first presented at the so-called Biennale 2 by Flash Art magazine in Prague. The work did have problems in Belgium, where politicians clearly stated that the work may be offensive to the Muslim population, thinking momentarily that Saddam was a religious figure.
And now a question from Steve Price, who listens to us in the United States.
I have noticed that you still pronounce Prague in the Germanic form of Prague, instead of Prague, you know, like Hague and Sprague. Why is that?
Well, this sounds like a question that should be put to English linguists rather than Radio Prague, since we did not invent the pronunciation here. It is a result of centuries of mutual contact between European nations. But my uneducated guess is that since Praha is called Praga in Russian, Polish, Bulgarian, Romanian, Hungarian, Italian, Greek and Spanish, Prague in Serbian, Croatian, Gaelic, Welsh and Turkish, and Prago in Esperanto, for example, there is nothing explicitly Germanic about its pronunciation in English, and there is little reason why it should be pronounced differently, even though the French spelling resembles words like Hague. And now we only have time to repeat our competition question for September. This month we would like you to tell us the name of the world-famous physicist who was born in 1838 in what is now the Czech Republic's second city of Brno and has a unit named after him which is used to define the speed of a moving object relative to the speed of sound. I apologize for the definition, which may not be accurate, but let's hope it's understandable. Please send us your answers by next Saturday, September the 30th, to english@radio.cz or Radio Prague 12099 Prague, the Czech Republic. There will be small prizes for four of you who send us the correct answer. Till next week, bye-bye.
And that was Pavla Horáková with another edition of Mailbox. And now this week's letter from Prague is written by Stephen Weeks.
Al fresco. I was trapped in this nightmare. Perhaps I'd seen too many Fellini movies. I was in a dining room, was I? Squeezing behind the seats of people eating, feasting. I'd adopted that sideways, crab-like creep that makes one believe one is paper thin. But still I was passing uncomfortably close by these revellers, these strangers. Who were all these people? None of them seemed to recognise me or even acknowledge my existence. I felt I was intruding. No, it wasn't Fellini. Instead, more like something from that interminable film Last Year in Marienbad. Yes, in that movie, no one seemed to react to anyone else. They were like this, in a trance. Tables, chairs, diners, on and on they went. Would I ever find the door? Would I ever escape? Unless that was part of my dream too, I felt I was bathed in sweat. Surely there must be an exit, an escape. Then suddenly there was, but no door. The tables just vanished behind me somehow. There were cobbles instead of carpet, and I found myself out in the middle of the old town square. Yes, there was Jan Hus's statue. At this point I must have woken up. I remembered the torment of the dream. Yes, exactly as I had experienced it for real that afternoon. You see, the whole of old Prague has now been turned into an immense dining room. Inside lobbies, passages, under arcades, out in squares, along streets, you can no longer make out the Baroque or the Gothic or the Secessionist, for all you can see is a sea of laundered napery bedecked with glasses, plates, cutlery, and masticating humans grazing across the wonderful English of Czech menus. Chicken spit on rice. Green salad with bulb. Where's the city gone? The Gothic arcades of the old town square now aren't to be seen. Restaurants, over the last 3 or 4 years, have gradually been building huge permanent structures. They started with decks. Then a fence round the deck. Then an awning, then sides in case of drafts, then heaters, fridges. In some French towns, they deal with this problem quite simply. Build what you like, as long as on Monday mornings, 10 to 11, it's all clear for street cleaning. The square at the heart of Malastrana, on the castle side of the river, used to be a lot bigger. But the temporary wooden butcher's stalls of the 17th century managed to get rebuilt in stronger materials in the 18th century. Then an additional floor was added, or two. Then someone bought them and they thought they'd look better as a kind of palace. Even today, in Wenceslas Square, a restaurateur has had the cunning idea of opening a cafe in an old tram car right in the centre. I watch with amusement as week by week it gets ever more permanent. Next year, it might be a tramway-themed building, with an owner who indignantly insists he not only owns the site, but a slim wedge of the earth down to its very core and an ever-widening wedge of the skies above. I hope it's just a phase Prague has to go through, a reaction to the old regime which didn't permit such outdoor frivolity. But please, dear city, to survive, let tourists and us others be allowed to see the wood for the trees.
And that was Stephen Weeks with this week's edition of Letter from Prague. And now it's time to pass you on to David Vaughan, who has prepared another edition of Czech Books, where you'll hear about what Shakespeare means to Czechs today.
For this edition of Czech Books, I've come down to the Philosophical Faculty of Prague's Charles University, and I'm here to talk to one of the most respected and best-known professors here at the university. That's Dr. Martin Hilsky, who is a professor of English literature and is very well known in this country for his translations of Shakespeare. He's translated over 20 Shakespeare plays and also much of the great bard's poetry. Thank you very much, Dr. Hilsky, for finding some time to talk to us.
It's a pleasure.
I'd like to start by talking a little bit about the Summer Shakespeare Festival, which has just ended here in Prague and is always really one of the big cultural events every summer. I'd like to ask you about your involvement in the festival, because it's really at two levels, isn't it? At one level, you're a translator, yeah, and many of the productions that we see here, yeah, are in your translations. You're also very actively interested in the productions themselves. You're interested in the whole theatre as well.
This is very true. I always go to the first rehearsals. where the text is read for the first time and discussed by the actors and directors. And then I go to many reruns and so on. So I'm involved, and I usually speak about the language. This is, you know, my job. And I like this dialogue because I not only share my experience with the actors, but it works the other way around as well.
Yes, I mean, do you end up arguing sometimes that somebody will say, I'm sorry, I can't read that line. Can you retranslate it?
Well, this is what happens.
And you don't mind?
Not at all. It doesn't happen too often, I must say. But when it happens, I always try to think about it and find a solution.
I'm very interested in your translations of Shakespeare because they are, in a sense, controversial. I remember a few years ago there was quite even a passionate debate in one of the Czech daily newspapers about whether it's wise or whether it's the best path to take in translating Shakespeare to choose, as you have done, modern Czech. How do you defend yourself against the argument that these are plays that were written over 400 years ago? There should be an element of that archaic language in the Czech too.
Well, I would use archaic language if necessary, but I would, if my defense is needed, I would defend myself on several points. The first is that modern Czech is the only language I really know. If I wanted to translate Shakespeare into the Czech of the late 16th and early 17th century, it would be an artificial reconstruction of the language. I do not know, however beautiful it is. The second point is that even if I succeeded, people would not understand that language because simply English language cannot be compared with the Czech language of that period. The English language was much more developed, and Shakespeare developed it in such a tremendous way, and we have no Shakespeare at that time, and it would be absolutely impossible to translate Shakespearean quibbles and puns. Absolutely impossible. And it would be a pity, because then the audiences simply would not get Shakespeare. So my arguments are very simple and fundamental, I would say.
In a sense, these problems exist even with modern Czech. I mean, for example, in English, and especially in British English, there is to this day a great love of puns,
yes,
which plays a central role in English writing. Yes. And also Shakespeare's language, I believe that he uses a vocabulary of around about 40,000 words. I don't know if that's true. Czech doesn't have the same variations in its vocabulary to choose from that English does, with so many different influences on the language over the centuries. Mm. How do you deal with all these problems as well in translating into modern Czech?
First of all, you are right. I think it's about 25,000 words on Shakespeare, which is a tremendous amount. I mean, the vocabulary is miraculously rich. What can you do with all this in Czech? Of course, you could give up translating in the first place. That would be one possible response to the difficulty of translation. Yet, I did it. In fact, I gave up once, and then I came back to it, because I think the job of the translator is to translate what is untranslatable. So, anyway, there are many difficulties, because the languages are radically different. Yet, there are some chances, some possibilities offered by the Czech language. For example, as far as the punning goes, it may be translated, not literally. So I would defend the translation which is true to the meaning and function of words, but not to the words themselves, because that is not possible.
And what about Shakespeare's verse, such forms as, you know, thinking of classic examples such as the iambic pentameter or whatever meter form you might be writing in, can that be translated into Czech, or does it have to be adapted into another meter?
No, it can be translated, although iambic meter is very rare in Czech poetry, but there is some iambic poetry, exquisite poetry. Machas Mei, the romantic poem, is written in that meter, and it works. It's slightly more artificial in Czech than in English. In English, it's natural, although, of course, Shakespeare's Latin.
That's because in English we talk in di-dum, 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 di-dum.
Absolutely. Yes. The second syllable is very often stressed.
And how would it normally be in spoken Czech?
Well, in spoken Czech, it is the first syllable, always, without exception. Even if you have that preposition, it is accented. So the task of the translator, again, is enormously difficult because the English meter is uprising. It goes up, whereas we go down. So, in fact, you have to go up, although your nature is to go down, and yet you must pretend that it is, in fact, a pleasure, because otherwise the effort must be concealed. And it is technically possible. I don't want to go into technical details, but it can be done, although it is indeed difficult, and different translators, of course, have different approaches, but it is possible.
You've brought several of your translations with you. Could we maybe hear a couple of verses of Shakespeare in Czech?
Yes, indeed. So now I shall read one of Shakespeare's sonnets, which I translated all of them, and this is one of them, and I think it's one of the most beautiful sonnets. And I hope, if you listen to this, that the Czech rhythm and meter and the music will be there. I at least hope so, although it will be much different from Shakespeare's original, as far as the sound is concerned. Mám srovnávat tě s krásným letním dnem, tvá krása září víc, víc laskavá je. Vždyť létu brzy skončí pronájem a vichr serve něžné poupě máje.
Well, I'm going to let our listeners out of their misery and say which of the sonnets it is. It's probably the best known of all Shakespeare's sonnets, Shall I Compare Thee to a Summer's Day? When I look to neighbouring Germany, for example, in the 19th century, with the whole emergence of the Sturm und Drang movement, Romanticism, Shakespeare was a huge influence. Was that the case here in Bohemia or in the Czech-speaking world as well?
It's good you mentioned Germany, because this is a special case. They declared Shakespeare to be their own poet, you know, so they appropriated him almost. And I think Shakespeare played a very important role in the forming the German nationhood. I mean, it was really a political issue. In Czech lands, in Bohemia and Moravia, Shakespeare was very important, but the importance was slightly different because the translators of the 19th century usually wanted to prove that the Czech language is good enough to compete with the German translations of Shakespeare. You know, so the idea was, here we are, a very small nation in Central Europe, neighboring Germany, but as far as Shakespeare goes, we can handle his language, his plays and his poems, as well as the Germans. So the national impulse was there. The 19th century was the century of nationalities, emerging nationalities, and no doubt this was one of the reasons. But I also think it was the love for Shakespeare mediated by the awareness that he is the great spirit and great writer, one of the greatest writers, and there was this challenge to wrangle the miracle, the gift of Shakespeare, into Czech.
And were there poets, playwrights who were influenced directly by Shakespeare, who took their inspiration from him?
There are many Czech poets who respond to Shakespeare. Holan, very well known, and I think one of the best Czech poets, in fact, of the 20th century, wrote Night with Hamlet, translated into English, I think. And there are many, many poems responding to Shakespeare. What we do not have a playwright who would write historical plays comparable to the Henrys and Richards, Richard II, Richard III. And also, I don't think that the drama we have would follow Shakespeare's example. The comedy is entirely different. The tragedy is different. Even the sonnets, until recently, were written in the Italian form, you know, not in the Shakespeare's form. So these are difficult and complex matters, yes.
And one last question. There's the famous referencing Shakespeare to the seacoast of Bohemia. Of course, Bohemia doesn't have a seacoast, it's a landlocked country. Are there any other interesting Czech references or links in Shakespeare's work?
Yes, yes. In the same play, The Winter's Tale, not only the seacoast and the famous bear that devours one of the characters of the play on that Czech seashore, but there is also a character called Autolycus, who is a thief, but a very gifted thief, because he sings and, you know, he's gifted. And I must say that this Czech Bohemian character, I simply was reminded of many Czechs nowadays when I read Autolycus. And also, no one knows this, I think, not many people know it, but in Twelfth Night, there is a very small but interesting reference to a Hermit of Prague. This is what Feste says at the end of the Twelfth Night, but I'm afraid that's it.
We don't have much time left now, but before we end the program, I'd like to return to one more extract from Shakespeare in Czech. This is going to be probably the most famous soliloquy in all of Shakespeare's plays. It's from Hamlet, and so Martin Hilsky is going to read a little bit of the famous To Be or Not To Be speech in Czech. I hope you've enjoyed this program. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can reach us, of course, as usual, at Radio Prague, 12099 Prague, the Czech Republic, or you can send us an email to english@radio.cz. So now over to Hamlet, alias Professor Martin Hilsky.
Být nebo nebýt, to je otázka. Je důstojnější zapřít se a snášet surovost osudu a jeho rány, nebo se vzepřít moři trápení a skoncovat to navždy. Zemřít, spát. A je to.
Ici Radio Prague, programme en langue française des émissions internationales de la radio tchèque, onde courte. Pour bénéficier d'une agréable réception, voici la grille de nos horaires en temps universel et fréquence en kilohertz. six heures vingt-sept. Europe, 5930, 7345. 7h30, 7h57, Europe, 9880, 11600. 16h30, 16h57, Europe, Afrique Centre, 5930, 17485. 18h30, 18h57, Europe, Afrique Ouest, 5930, 13580. 22h, 22h27, Amérique du Nord, 7345, 9415. Nous vous invitons à l'écoute sur le web. Pour cela, veuillez vous connecter au site www.radio.cz/français. Radio Prague est aussi sur le satellite. Vous trouverez toutes les informations sur notre site www.radio.cz.